Hi, Nino. It's good to have you back on Full Story.
Thanks for having me.
You went to Lake Cargelago recently in the wake of these murders. What was it like there? How are people coping?
Look, it's quite a small town, as the name would suggest. It surrounds a large lake. You know, they call it the oasis in the outback. But the town itself is quite small, typical grid-like pattern. And because of the nature of this quite awful offending, you can drive the streets where it happened. You can work out, oh, there's the police station where Julian Ingram reported for bail that morning. There's his house on the corner. You keep going down here and there's the local pool. Around that corner is where Julian Ingram allegedly killed Sophie Quinn and John Harris. The town itself certainly is still felt very, I guess, kind of shaped and scarred a little by that. There was an unease, obviously, when you've got a fugitive as well. And there was also a sense, I suppose, that even people who didn't directly know the victims or know the accused here, they knew of them. People would make comments like, I always saw that little car driving around town, referring to Sophie's car. You know, they didn't know her necessarily, but they knew the car. There was, I suppose, a really lingering sense of unease there and of shock too, because obviously this is not a normal thing to happen. A town of barely 1,000 people dealing with a triple murder and the person allegedly responsible still being on the run. It's a very unusual thing to try and get your head around.
Tell us more about the victims, Sophie Quinn, her partner John Harris, and Sophie's aunt Nerida. What do we know about them?
So Sophie had been in a relationship with Julian Ingram before. There'd been restraining order out that she'd taken out against him, dating back to offending he'd allegedly committed back in November. So a few months before this, she was 7 months pregnant with a young boy. Her family say she planned to call Troy. John Harris was her partner. We sort of know less about him, but, you know, both young people, both well-known around town. And Nerida Quinn was Sophie's auntie. So she lived on the opposite side of town. She lived in a house with her husband and children. And from everybody I spoke to up there were good, kind people who were well-known around the town. And this was a tragedy for this to happen.
You've given us a few details, but can you take us through what police are alleging Julian Ingram did?
Yeah, so police allege that Julian Ingram was in his council ute, the ute he used as a worker. He drove to the property where Sophie Quinn spent a lot of her time. She was sitting out the front of that property in a car with John Harris. He shot both of those people dead. He then has travelled to the other side of town to where Nerida Quinn lived. She's come out of her house and come towards his ute. He's killed her, and then he's also shot Kayla McQueen. He's then effectively turned his ute around and driven out of town to the north and west towards Mount Hope. And he wasn't seen for a few days. He was then spotted again up in that Mount Hope region some days later.
And some witnesses will allege some pretty disturbing things about Julian Ingram. I believe they said he was seen laughing.
That's right, yeah. So Kayla McQueen, who's the only sort of survivor of this shooting, said that Ingram was laughing when he was sort of carrying it out. So he's laughing as he shot Nerida and then was laughing as he also shot him. There was about 5 shots discharged at that second property where shooting occurred. So very unusual and disturbing thing to happen. Awful at the best of times, obviously, for there to be a triple murder and a shooting of this nature, but for Ingram to allegedly be laughing while that was going on is quite horrific.
There's a history of domestic violence offending there with Julian Ingram. We've got some more details around that, including several AVOs out against him.
You know, effectively Ingram had a history of having apprehended violence orders out against him dating back to around 2011. Now, police were fairly open about the fact that he had that history, but they also said, you know, he complied with all those previous orders. The morning of the shooting itself, he actually, you know, reported as he was required to as part of his bail to police for those outstanding family violence offences involving Sophie Quinn. So you've got a person here that does have this long history of having court orders out against him for offending, including against family members and former partners. But on the other hand, police are saying, look, when we put him on these orders and when he was on bail, he was compliant. So there's a difficulty there in trying to pass whether there should have been tougher restrictions on Ingram, whether he should have been on bail at all, because they're saying on the one hand, yes, he was alleged to have offended against people, and yes, he was subject to apprehended violence orders dating back more than a decade. But on the other hand, when he was on bail, when he was on these orders, he was compliant. So it's an awkward position for police to be in, and it's something that they're saying they're going to review, this history of violence towards others, but in the context that when he's handled through the bail system or the court system, he's compliant with those court orders.
Yeah, police have been directly asked about those decisions. I guess it's a very familiar story here that we've heard. A man with a history of domestic violence, now a suspect in more violent offending. Is that part of the discussion and tragedy of this case?
Oh, look, absolutely. And I've covered family violence murders like this one dating back, you know, most of my career, almost two decades now. And the vast majority of occasions, the offender is known to police. There is a history of violence there. You know, in New South Wales, we have had tightening of bail laws for family violence offenders. We've got, you know, electronic monitoring now for those accused of serious offences, and we've got tougher restrictions for those who breach bail. But with Ingram, he didn't breach bail. So you are always going to have these alleged offenders who aren't necessarily serious enough to trigger that threat or that concern within police, but also the courts, that they need a higher level of monitoring, or that they should be remanded, you know, locked up pending those charges, as opposed to we can handle this person on bail. The difficulty with this case, obviously, is that this person then went on and allegedly murdered three people, including the person who'd allegedly offended against. It makes it a really difficult kind of calculus, I suppose, to sort of work out how that could have possibly happened.
And another aspect of this is that Indigenous women are overrepresented in family-related deaths.
That's something I really wanted to kind of reflect on as part of my, you know, reporting up in Lake Cajaligo, was the fact that Sophie Quinn was Indigenous. There's obviously other factors in general in play with Indigenous women who are reporting family violence to police. It's hard to know whether they applied in this particular case, but we know that Indigenous women are more likely to get locked up than non-Indigenous women. They're more likely to have had not necessarily positive interactions with police. Does that mean it is less likely they are going to report potential breaches of those orders because they don't necessarily think they're going to be taken seriously? These are all things that are going to have to be looked at in terms of the longer term review of what happened with Julian Ingram and Sophie Quinn. But they are also based in research and fact and things that we know about how the justice system deals with Indigenous women who are the victims of family violence.
Police have now referred this case to the police watchdog. How much of this are they going to now investigate?
It's very hard to know the exact levels of review that watchdogs like this look at. I'd imagine they will be looking at things such as what was actually reported to police by Sophie Quinn back in November, what was the extent of the risk assessment or the threat they thought Julian Ingram posed, how was that monitored between November and when these offences happened in sort of mid to late January? Was there an escalation in behaviour, or was there something that Julian Ingram was doing over that time that may have foreshadowed some of this that was missed? Perhaps it'll look at things like resourcing. You know, we're talking about a small town that is basically in the middle of, you know, central west New South Wales. There's not a lot of resources going around for police, and alleged offences such as those committed by Julian Ingram, which were obviously not serious enough to trigger things like electronic monitoring, were, you know, stalking related. Does that necessitate a greater level of police resources to look at every single family violence offender who is on bail in your region, for example, and constantly monitor their threat? But again, speaking generally about bail, Julian Ingram had a full-time job. He had safe place to live and accommodation. He had connections to the area. All these things are things that generally are considered very favourably when a decision's made about granting somebody bail. I guess what we're sort of saying here is there's no obvious smoking gun. There is nothing that is really clear that this review needs to hone in on as an enormous error by police. We're looking very much at this case as a tragedy because it was someone who was on bail for family violence offending who is then allegedly murdered three people in a family violence offence. sometimes there's not enough of a sign there that something like this is going to happen.
Are advocates saying anything? Have they said anything to you about what they want to see after this case?
Look, the thing about this case that does, I suppose, line up with a lot of the research is we know things can be risk factors such as pregnancy, such as reporting offenders to police, new relationships. We know that that can be a risk factor as well. And Sophie and John Harris were in a relatively new relationship. So advocates I've spoken to and that we've sort of I've spoken to previously when it comes to family violence related murders have sort of said, look, there's some various things here that police maybe should look at when they're assessing threat and risk. Was that missed in this case? I mean, that's going to be open to the review possibly to kind of say, look, there wasn't enough thought given to A, B and C. If there had been, that might have resulted in harsher bail conditions or even Julian Ingram being placed on remand. It's difficult to say at this point.
We'll be right back.